From UALR Public Radio and the Argenta Arts Foundation, this is a Tales from the South Tin Roof Project.
Playwriting, like some kind of twisted superhero power, turned two of my glaring weaknesses, acting on stage and writing poetry, into an asset.
Recorded in front of a live audience at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas.
What I learned or didn't learn in graduate school paled to my wide-eyed experience in Boston, a true Arkansas rube in the land of chowder and Red Sox.
This week, it's an intimate dinner with a notable Southerner on our unrehearsed show, telling their story as if they were sitting on the porch with you.
And in Boston, I survived, barely, on a diet of temp jobs. The trick was finding the next one when you knew the job you had was about to run out. Once your filing was down at the lower part of the alphabet, you had to start looking.
So sit back, relax, and reconnect with the power of a story.
And it was, of course, normal to be wearing a surgical smock in the back of a bank that nobody had heard of opening mail that had crosses and cash money stuffed inside while your every move was being watched by a rent-a-cop. This is what I came to Boston to do.
Now, let's go live to Tales from the South.
Dixieland, where I was born early on a frosty morning of the way, Dixieland. After the coffee, after the beer, it all dries up these tears. Now go tug on my shirt tail, stay behind the door, catch me if you can, baby, down on the floor. You keep yourself quiet. I wish I was in the land of cotton, old time Sarah, not forgotten the way, Dixieland. In Dixieland, where I was born early on a frosty morning, the way, Dixieland. You want to take it away? Yeah, boys, girls, hold out your hands, stick it in the pockets, try to live in land. You keep yourself quiet, fill up the harbor, throw in the rag. Daddy's got a toothache, baby's on the way. You keep yourself quiet. Born Casanova, close up the shade, please let me catch you after you've done pay. Dixieland, in Dixieland, where I was born early on a frosty morning of the way, Dixieland. Do 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 do
do do do do do do do do do do do. How about tonight's music by Bonnie Montgomery? What y'all think? She has CDs for sale after the show, and more can be found at BonnieMontgomeryMusic.com. All right, well, welcome to Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and to a very special edition of Tales from the South, a series we call the Tin Roof Project, where well-known Southerners bring their own true stories to life. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Timonos Publishing Company. And tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library, all right here in North Little Rock, Arkansas. And I'm your host, Paula Morrell. On my left here, strumming his 1931 national resonator, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here? What do y'all think about our set? These genuine screen doors from the Arkansas Delta with mixed media portraiture are by esteemed Arkansas artist V.L. Cox from her Images of the American South collection. A portion of the proceeds from the sale of these works goes to Tales from the South. More can be seen at her website, greatfineart.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern style storytelling? Originally from Hot Springs, Arkansas, Werner Trishman's numerous plays, including Dog Star, Wrought Iron, and Killers, have been staged by Moving Arts in Los Angeles, Ensemble Studio Theater in New York City, The New Theater in Boston, Mobtown Players in Baltimore, and Red Octopus Productions in Little Rock, Arkansas. In addition to the United States, Werner's plays have been produced in England, Italy, and Romania. Werner was a resident at the Mount Sequoia New Play Retreat in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and his play, Lawn Dart, won first prize in the Contemporary Arts Center of New Orleans New Play Competition. His full-length comedy, You Have to Serve Somebody, is published by the Dramatic Publishing Company. Several of his short plays are published by PlayScripts, Inc., and his dark one-act comedy, Killers, is published through Original Works Publishing. His monologues have appeared in the Best Women's Stage Monologues 1999 and Audition Arsenal for Women in Their 20s, published by Smith & Cross. He was the first playwright to receive the Porter Prize, an Arkansas Literary Award recognizing outstanding achievement by an Arkansas writer. In addition to playwriting, Werner Trishman was an editor and columnist for the Little Rock Free Press and then Arkansas Democrat Gazette for 18 years. He has written for multiple publications, including The Village Voice, Nashville Scene, Babel, The Boston Phoenix, and American Craft. Werner has an MFA in playwriting from Boston University, and he currently lives in Little Rock with his wife and two wild and crazy boys. The boys love to run, and Werner is obligated to chase after them. Tonight, Werner takes us up north to a job unlike any other in the temp job. Ladies and gentlemen, Werner Trishman.
It started out like any other temp job. Report to this address and fill out the paperwork, and then you can start. The woman at the temp agency told me this and then asked this pointed question. Do you have any problems working with a religious organization? No, I said. But she made it sound ominous, as if she was sending me to work for vampires in a bloody meat suit. A couple of years before, I had taken my first playwriting class at Hendricks College in Conway, a small Arkansas town. It was 1985, and the world wasn't screaming for playwrights any more than they are now. That fact might have mattered to me if I had any God-given sense, but oh well. Playwriting, like some kind of twisted superhero power, turned two of my glaring weaknesses, acting on stage and writing poetry, into an asset. When delivered on stage, my writing had the sheen of credibility. I had terrific professors at Hendricks who gave me lots of encouragement. As the saying goes, I got just enough praise to be dangerous. So after Hendricks, I headed for Boston for graduate school. This is the first time I had lived outside of Arkansas. The first couple of years in the city, I was occupied with graduate school for playwriting. My professor at the school was Derek Walcott, a poet and sometime playwright from the tiny island of St. Lucia in the Caribbean. After I left school, he would write a musical with Paul Simon and win the Nobel Prize for Literature. However, I just knew Derek as the somewhat scattered, thick-voiced man who smoked Pall Malls and spent the first 20 minutes of every class arranging where every student would sit. No, you don't need to sit there. You sit over there next to her. What's your name? Werner, I don't like that. I'm going to call you Carl. Sit over there, Carl. What I learned or didn't learn in graduate school paled to my wide-eyed experience in Boston, a true Arkansas rube in the land of chowder and Red Sox. and the T, Boston Subway. Now, I was out of school, and I was expecting to live the life of a playwright. I would go to rehearsals and with beautiful actresses dazzled by my words. I would attend the opening of my plays in a tuxedo and pal around with other literary lions. I would make money. Somehow. I hadn't thought that out yet, but I knew my life would be filled with glamour and attention and tuxedos. Yeah, that didn't happen. I went to work as a temp. Temp is short for temporary worker, which is short for the strange kid in the office who files things. Here's where I tell the younger people that filing is this old-fashioned thing that they used to hire people to do. It was back when things were typed on paper, and then the paper was put in big metal filing cabinets. It was a primitive system, yes, but we all survived. Thank you very much. And in Boston, I survived, barely, on a diet of temp jobs. The trick was finding the next one when you knew the job you had was about to run out. Once your filing was down at the lower part of the alphabet, you had to start looking. If you were on W and they didn't have the next job lined up, you would suddenly forget how to alphabetize. I couldn't do that forever. And then it was time to panic and think about coming back home to Arkansas. Most of my filing jobs happened in office buildings downtown, but for this religious one, I had to go to this bank off of Kenmore Square. The lobby of this bank, which didn't have any other branches in Boston, seemed particularly empty and old. My work was in a room in the back, which I could only gain access after I stared up at a video camera mounted above a door and said my name. As I did this, my mind flashed, and I wondered if I would ever see sunlight again. There was a buzzing sound and the click of the door being unlocked. I stepped into a small cinder block room that had a row of metal lockers alongside a wall and a long table underneath a small window that offered a view of a sidewalk. Before I could get my bearings, an officious older woman, clearly the person in charge, was telling me to put my bag in a locker and then roll up my sleeves and put on a surgical smock. Now my head was spinning, and I hadn't been told what this was all about. There were a few others milling around in this tiny room making chit-chat and others coming in putting on surgical smocks. It all seemed ordinary to them, but meanwhile, I was covering my neck with my hands and looking to see if I could fashion a cross out of a couple of coffee stirrers. Soon we were all directed to take a seat at a long table. I immediately noticed two things. The first was a beefy security guard sitting on a stool at one end of the table. The second was somebody had rolled in a big metal cart loaded down with huge bags filled with mail. Then the officious woman, who had a direct tone and a withering look that reminded me of Nurse Ratched in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, gave out the instructions. We were to open the mail. In front of us, each of us sitting at the table, was a small plastic basket and a letter opener. We would be given a stack of mail, and we had to open each letter and pull out the contents. Then in one pile, we would put any money or checks, and in another pile, we would put anything else we found. Next, Nurse Ratched gave us a set of instructions that remained one of the strangest things ever uttered to me. She said, "When you are opening the letters, what's inside has a tendency to fly out. These letters have small plastic crosses in them. If a cross or money falls on the floor, you have to announce to everybody, 'Cross on the floor, 20 on the floor,' before you pick it up." Of course, Nurse Ratched said this as if it was the most normal thing in the world. And it was, of course, normal to be wearing a surgical smock in the back of a bank that nobody had heard of opening mail that had crosses and cash money stuffed inside while your every move was being watched by a rent-a-cop. This is what I came to Boston to do. Once my mind stopped reeling, and as I opened letter after letter, I realized who I was working for. I was opening mail for Reverend Ike. As this was the late 80s, the power and influence of cable TV preachers had not fully diminished. Reverend Ike could be compared to Jimmy Swaggart and Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, but with crucial differences. Reverend Ike was black, and he operated his empire not out of the South, but New York City. Now, oddly enough, I knew about Reverend Ike because when I was a student at Hendrix, there was a brief bit of Reverend Ike craze. Some jokers on campus had found a way to get on Reverend Ike's mailing list, and they ended up receiving Reverend Ike's trinkets. The most popular one was a plastic shower cap that had an outline of a red handprint on top. You were supposed to wear the shower cap at night and feel the power of Reverend Ike's godly hand on your head. I'm pretty sure a few of my friends at Hendrix wore those shower caps to class. It was really great to laugh at Reverend Ike then, but now the joke had turned decidedly serious. I was being given a close-up view of Reverend Ike's direct mail operation. The series of letters I opened had a picture, no kidding, of a smiling Reverend Ike in front of a blown-up dollar bill. The letter itself that you would fill out and send back to Reverend Ike with a donation of whatever you could send, of course, had a list of items that asked Reverend Ike to pray for. This list included sensible things like good health and family safety. The list also included a new TV and new car. And right beside the new car line, you had to write the exact make and model that you wanted God to deliver. Don't read the letters, Nurse Ratchet said to me in a disapproving tone. We don't have time. This woman, who clearly slept on a bed of nails at night, was at least right about that. We had 8 people at the table, furiously opening mail, and we were hardly making a dent. Meanwhile, the sound of envelopes being ripped open mixed together with shouts of, cross on the floor! 10 on the floor! When my day was blessedly over and I was standing on the platform waiting for the subway to take me home, I was shaking my head and mumbling to myself, how did I get to this point? I couldn't go back tomorrow and open more mail for smiling Reverend Ike, could I? Was this it for me? Would I have to tuck my tail between my legs and head back to Arkansas? Would I ever wear a tuxedo? I lasted one more day in the employment of Nurse Ratchet and the Reverend. It was right after that I got a job working for a play publisher with an office in downtown Boston. At that job, I found a couple of friends who had a small theater company, and I became part of that company, and for a few years we put on shows. It wasn't nearly as glamorous as I imagined, but it was a whole lot closer to the life I wanted than those couple of days opening Reverend Ike's mail.
All right, well, thank you so much, Werner Trishman, for being on our Tin Roof Project at Tales from the South. So you say at the beginning of your story that you had terrific professors at Hendrix College, which is here in Central Arkansas, who gave you lots of encouragement and praise. So can you tell us a little bit about who these professors were?
So glad you asked this question for a couple of different reasons. First of all, the professors that I had, the first one that I want to mention is Dr. Rosemary Hindenburg, who's since retired from Hendrix College, and she... outside of my parents, she's really probably one of the strongest influences on my life. Just really terrifically wise person, someone who was just interested in theater, who could give you the right encouragement, who could lead you on the way and do so in her own way, in her own style. I was already in love with theater, in love with what I was going to, in love with that aspect of it, but she only deepened it. And she also gave me a lot of great encouragement that, of course, being the fool that I am, I just took it and couldn't stop. The other person was Frank Rowland, who actually taught me playwriting there at Hendrix College. And he has unfortunately since passed on very recently, and which is one of the reasons why I thank you for asking this question. He was just this really very smart professor at Hendrix College. He was also the... He worked on the techno side of theater, designing sets. Pretty soon after I was there, and though no relation to me, he moved on and did other things there at Hendricks College, and just really had a very searching mind, somebody that was interested in a lot of different things and was very smart and could do a lot of different things. So those two people together, you know, I just, you know, it was, without that support, I don't know where I would have been.
After you graduated from your MFA program in Boston, you say in your story that you were expecting to live the life of a playwright, filled with glamour and attention and tuxedos. So in your story, we see that it didn't happen immediately, but did it happen eventually?
I'm trying to think. I don't know that I've ever put on a tuxedo, and I'm sure I have outside of my high school prom, but I don't remember it. Yeah, I've had a lot of great experiences being a playwright. I've been able to see my work. The things that strike me when you ask this question or this is that I went out some years ago. There was a small theater company out in Los Angeles that developed a relationship with a person out there who was running the theater company. I became friends with, and I got to see a lot of my work out there. And I would go out to Los Angeles to see it. And this was the first time that I did it. I mean, it's an exceptionally tiny theater company. I mean, it was this, I don't think there was 30 seats in the audience, and you had to access the bathroom through the stage itself. That's how small it was. But yet it was out in Los Angeles. I got some reviews out in Los Angeles papers. The first one was absolutely horrible and imprinted on my mind for the rest of my life. Hopefully not on my gravestone, but nevertheless, because it said surrealistic bilge was some aspect of the review, not that I remember. But that it felt like I had an experience of an honest-to-goodness playwright.
Those of us who have done temp work certainly recognize the Nurse Ratched character that ran Reverend Ike's Mail. So were there other interesting characters that you either worked for or ran into while doing temp work?
When I was living in Boston at the time and I was really doing a lot of different temp jobs, it was very interesting because you really just sort of were, you know, you were hired by somebody else and you came in, and often you'd be in these office buildings and, you know, some people who might care to know would come and find you, but mostly you were working away from everybody else. It wasn't like you had a disease, but it was close enough. You know, you sort of like, oh, they're over there. But what I remember sort of most vividly about this was that I was a temp for a little while at this headhunting agency. They would find people that would then get them hired by other companies. And what I remember was that there was just this pool of people who are doing nothing but on the phone all day long, calling people, trying to get them to go leave their job or take this job at this company. Every morning they would have this sales meeting, and the sales meeting would be nothing but some person who would stand up in front of a room of all these people who are going to have to make these calls all day and try to get them pumped up to go, you know, make those calls, because they were cold calling people. And you know, it was like anything. It was sort of a lot of rejection, a lot of sort of, you know, well, no, I can't take that job, or I don't care, and who are you, and so on and so forth. But this guy would stand up in front of this room of people, and he would give them this sort of rah-rah speech, and I remember hearing it, and he would often compare what they were doing to Larry Bird, who was in the Boston Celtics at the time, and I just remember thinking, this is nothing like what Larry Bird does. You don't have... They're going to be on the phone all day. Larry Bird's, you know, he's at home counting his money, you know, so it's...
All right, well, we have a few minutes here at the end for audience questions.
Carl, Werner.
Yes, that's right, Werner, that's right.
The Argenta Arts Foundation is a huge supporter of Tales from the South. And at ACT next door, we've underwritten some of the new plays that have come here. And you've done, obviously, plays in England and Romania. We're very interested in what play you would do here in Argenta.
I'm very interested and glad you asked. thank you. My answer to that is this. The Arkansas New Play Festival, which is sponsored by Theater Squared, which is a very exciting theater company up in Fayetteville, they've partnered with the Arkansas Rep, and every year they're bringing in readings of new plays. I had a play of mine called This Farmer that was read in the last New Play Festival. Right at that exceptionally beautiful theater here in downtown North Little Rock. So I would love for somebody to write a check to, so that play could be produced. It was done in a handheld reading. Okay, well, I understand. I can't help credit a boy for asking. This Farmer is a play that I wrote that's about the late Arkansas photographer Michael This Farmer. It's a new play. I'm really very interested in seeing it done. I would love to see it being done at that theater. I don't think anybody that can live in central Arkansas not be impressed by what's happening in downtown North Little Rock. It's pretty amazing.
Greg Thompson Gallery here in Argenta is showing the This Farmer photographs next month as their art walk. So, yeah, it might be a great time to kind of partner, which was voted the best gallery in Arkansas right here in Argenta.
Thank you. Thank you for telling me that. I didn't know. That's great.
What's your next play?
I have a play, a short play that I am in the process of writing about Mozart that is going to be performed in Fort Wayne, Indiana with the Fort Wayne Philharmonic. In late April, and as long as I can finish it, he said, then that will happen in late April. It's a short play about Mozart.
You said you had some experience acting. Tell us about it.
I can relate that exactly to North Little Rock. The Red Octopus Company performed Pericles, the Shakespeare play, underneath the Broadway Bridge, not too far from here. For that play, I don't even remember the name of my character, but I did wear a grass skirt, and I did perform outdoors in Arkansas in August, I believe. So there you go. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Werner Trishman, for being on our Tin Roof Project on Tales from the South. So how about our story and storyteller tonight? What'd y'all think? You can hear more from Werner at his website, wernertplays.com. Thank you to our live audience, and thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library. Additional support provided by the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can download and listen to our podcast on our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation in North Little Rock, Arkansas. Discover more at argentaartsdistrict.org. Our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle magazine at aymag.com. Additional support provided by the Winthrop Rockefeller Institute at livethelegacy.org. Also, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau and Oxford American Magazine, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing at oxfordamerican.com. Writer accommodations provided by Robin Wood Bed and Breakfast. Studio time by Infrared Studio Productions. Graphics by Robin Steves at Studio B. Our executive producer and host is Paula Morrell. Our production engineer is Jay Jones. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern style storytelling alive, and we'll see you next week, either on this station or at Starving Artist Cafe, for another edition of Tales from the South.